All right, we are in Proverbs. Our reading assignment was Proverbs chapter 7, verses chapter 7 through chapter 9. This passage, of course, chapter 8, includes the personification of wisdom, as if wisdom is a person, giving the attributes of a person and how that person would act. So it's kind of an interesting chapter there. I don't know if there's anything that you saw in that reading that kind of caught your attention. One thing that caught my attention was chapter 8, verse 32. There when it says in verse 32, "Now therefore listen to me, my children, for blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise. Do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death." I thought it was interesting there, reading that passage and just the comfort it gives, knowing that we obtain favor from the Lord in our diligent study and searching of God's Word to understand it, to try to understand it better each day. It was a comforting thought to see that, the favor that we can get from the Lord. I think it's kind of demonstrated in David, showing how he is a man after God's own heart. I think that kind of demonstrates that. He diligently strived to know God better, meditating on His Word daily. Any other thoughts on the reading before we get going? Not really. Get started here. Folly of Fools. We talked about the folly of fools. And we talked about a good name. Just spend a minute here looking at what we talked about before to refresh our memories. Look at the definition of a fool. Basically, one that wants to do their own thing. They're not looking at advice, instruction, or anything. They just want to do their own thing. They're impulsive. A couple things about the fool. They have no fear of the Lord. And the regards God's power and principles unto righteousness. Disregards God's power and principles. And so just a couple things there. And then the characteristics of the fool we looked at. There's a couple things there. There's about six of them. They trust in themselves. They're deaf to instruction. They cannot be disciplined. They're impulsive, doing their own thing. And when you look at all those things together, that leads to committing evil. And then they're virtually unchangeable. It's hard to change a fool when they're stuck in their ways. And we looked at a little application there, looking at, hey, is there anything that we demonstrate in our life that we even come close to something of this nature and these kinds of character qualities, and we want to do a self-reflection, right? Look at those things, try to rid ourselves of those things so we can be the people that God wants us to be. We looked at a good name. We want to have a good name. Proverbs 22, verse 1 tells us that, and we looked at that passage there. It's to be chosen in great riches. And it's determined by a person's character and reputation. And as a Christian, it's important for us to have a good name, isn't it? Because we're representing Christ in everything that we do. And then a couple of qualities there, or ways to achieve a good reputation. We just looked at a couple of them, four of them. Having integrity, honesty, diligently seeking God, and righteous deeds and bearing fruit. Four ways there. All right, any other comments before we move on of what we studied last week? All right, we're going to get into our study then of lesson four. We're going to look at industry and laziness and business. What's up there? Okay. I love the study of Proverbs, just for the diverse, different, areas that can help us in our lives and guidance that it gives us. And when I think of when you look at Proverbs and all the provisions that God gives us in the study of Proverbs and the guidance that He gives us, I can't help but think of the Israelites, going through the wilderness and then finally get to the promised land, and the guidance and instruction that God gives them to help them during those times. You know, all kinds of things like how to help with, you know, health issues and diseases, how to handle leprosy. If you accidentally kill somebody, here's what you do. You have to go to the city of refuge, right? How to, you know, lending to the poor, how to take care of the poor, how to treat dead bodies. I mean, the list goes on. All kinds of things, the provisions God gave them, showing them, here's how, you know, guidance for living. And that's what I see in Proverbs as well. Just great, vast, diverse number of guidances, but all very valuable to us. And that's no exception for tonight's lesson either. You know, how to be good workers, how to be, how to conduct ourselves in business. You know, that's what we'll be focusing on tonight. And so that's going to help us in these areas: how to be good workers, how to conduct ourselves in business. So the first thing we're going to look at, though, is the character qualities of the lazy. Right place there. Okay, first character quality. We're going to look at all the qualities of a lazy person. I guess, kind of stepping back a second. If you looked at the study tonight of, you know, both how to be a good worker and conducting ourselves in business, you see a lot of what not to do. Right? You don't want to be lazy. You don't want to be dishonest. You know, a lot of what not to do. So that kind of goes along with our study tonight, and how we're going to approach these things. So the characteristics of a sluggard, right, or a lazy person, is number one, big thing, they like to sleep a lot, right? Chapter 6, verse 9, and you can see the humor that God uses in this passage here with those that are lazy, kind of making fun of them. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. And then also chapter 20, verse 13, do not love sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you'll be satisfied with bread. So for the lazy, the sluggard, sleep is really an excuse, right, to get out of work, how to be productive. Now, I need 7.5 hours of sleep, so sleep is very important to us all, right? But after about 7.5 hours of sleep, I need to be doing something, right? I've got responsibilities that I have to be a dad, you know, working and preparing for this lesson and stuff. So, but sleep is very important. It's important to remember that, but. Sleep can be an excuse, right, for the lazy. Well, the other thing that the lazy use is, the problem for the lazy is their inability to start. Right? They can't start a task. Chapter 21, verse 25, the desire of the lazy man kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. He covets greedily all day long, but the righteous gives and does not spare. And when I think of the lazy man, I think of that the passage talking about the parable of the talents. Right? The three that had talents given by their master, and the two servants doubled their talents, and the last servant did nothing. He didn't even start to try to gain that talent, right? He did nothing. He just buried it. And then in verse 26, you see where shows us that the reason he never started was because he was lazy. When it says, but his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not gathered seed. And speaking of the lazy, when do they want to start a task? When is a good time? Tomorrow is the best time. They always put it off till tomorrow. Right?
Why do you do your day, but you can put it off till tomorrow?
Exactly right. Yeah, that's their mentality. And they're also having an inability to complete a task. They may start one, but maybe maybe it gets a little too hard, and then they say, oh, it's getting tough. I need to just move on to something else. And we can see him, again, being ridiculed in chapter 19, verse 24 for this. This is probably one of the most humorous examples that I can find of a lazy person. A lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. He's so lazy, he puts his hand in the bowl to eat, and he can't even bring it back to his face to eat it. Similarly, chapter 12, verse 27, a lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. He doesn't even have the diligence to cook what he killed in the field. And I'll stop there and just kind of mention, you know, the importance when you think about training our children too. This is very important. It's an area that we need to impress on our children, the importance of, you know, working hard, good work ethic. Chapter 22, verse 6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, will not depart from it. I think this is talking to that passage. This is one of the ways we need to train them up, to teach them to be good workers and to work diligently. The value of a good work ethic and completing a task. And we should look at work as a privilege that God has given us. The ability to be able to work. Well, the lazy person also has a lot of excuses. Lots of excuses. Chapter 22, verse 13 says, a lazy man says, there is a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. In Ecclesiastes 11, 4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. This man, he observes the weather, the wind and the clouds, and decides not to even harvest his crop. And then you remember the response of the servant in the parable of the talent. It says, then he who had received one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground, and look, there you have what is yours. Basically, what that servant was saying was that his master was expecting more than he was willing to give. That's the bottom line there. So we see the consequences of his actions then in verse 26 when it says, but the Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited your money with the bankers, and at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. God isn't going to tolerate our excuses, is he? Well, the other thing about sluggards and the lazy is that they talk about their desires of success and is full of advice. They've got a lot of advice of how to get something done and what needs to be done. But a lot of times, when it comes down to doing it, they're not willing to help. Chapter 13, verse 4. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. And also there in chapter 14, 23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. So they often think they have the best ideas on how to get the work done. There in chapter 26, 16, that says the lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than 7 men who can answer sensibly. They talk about how to be productive, but they never do any of the work. Well, have we found ourselves doing this? You know, talking a lot about what needs to be done, what should be done, how to get it done. Maybe we don't jump out there and get it done. Right? Maybe something to think about there, and something to evaluate ourselves on. Any questions or comments on that?
Yeah, but just make sure we make that application to our spiritual service. Mm-hmm. I thought about Titus 2, I believe, where it talks about being, how Jesus redeemed us and how purified for himself and people zealous for good works. So if we're spiritually lazy, it talks about standing, a skilled man standing before a king. Well, we want to stand before the king. If we're lazy and slothful, I don't think we will in our spiritual service.
Appreciate that, Bill. Yeah. We'll got that a little later in our slide, too, but I appreciate you bringing it up. if we're lazy, you know, in our jobs, in our work, it probably carries over to our spiritual life as well. Talking about the talent. If you're faithful with little, you're not faithful with little, you're probably not going to be faithful with much either. Kind of the same lines there. All right, there's consequences for being lazy as well. That's what we're going to look at next. Consequences of laziness. What happens when we're lazy? Well, there's self-evident ruin. It's pretty obvious. It's evident. It can be seen. Chapter 24, beginning in verse 30, gives us some imagery of a man's house, right? How much disrepair it's in, because he's a lazy man. Beginning in verse 30. I went by the field of a lazy man, by the vineyard of a man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles, its stone wall was broken down. I think that's thistles. Sorry. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. This is something we can see today. You know, those that are lazy, people not maintaining the things that they have. Granted, there may be reasons why some that are just unable to take care of their things. There may be reasons why they're not. But, you know, we're talking about the lazy, right? And the consequences of being lazy. And I know there are exceptions here. I knew a man many years ago. I ended up having to go mow his lawn. He hired me to mow his lawn. Because it just got so in disarray. And if you go in his house, it was like a bomb went off in there all the time. All the time. But I knew the man, and I knew he was an exceptionally hard worker. He was always busy, always doing stuff. And I think it was a matter of priority, right? He was so busy doing so many things, so many good works, that he kind of left his house and his lawn in disrepair and ended up hiring me so I'd mow his lawn and kind of keep it orderly for him. So there are exceptions to that. But those are indicators there of what will happen to the lazy. Now, they also suffer poverty and want. That's a result of the sluggard. Chapter 19, verse 15. Laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Chapter 20, verse 4, the lazy man will not plow because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. And then what do we see in chapter 2 Thessalonians, chapter 3, verse 10, about those who don't work? It's a pretty popular verse. Those who do not work should not eat. Okay, and then the result of being lazy for the sluggard is they lose their independence. Chapter 12, verse 24 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. The diligent will usually have a choice about jobs, right? But not much will be available for the lazy, but the least desirable work. They're having trouble getting work. They're not trustworthy. They're not faithful. They don't show up. Right? If they can find any work at all. And they lose flexibility to choose jobs that'll help them to effectively support their families. Right? And as well to be faithful to the Lord in terms of their attendance. Limited on the amount of types of jobs they can get because they're not faithful. They're going to be limited on the types of jobs they can get that are going to help them to be faithful and be able to support their families. There's so many consequences being lazy. And they're frustrated and get nowhere. Chapter 13, verse 4 says, "The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich." So a lazy man is frustrated when, because he desires to have things, but no motivation to actually do anything to receive anything. Chapter 15, verse 9 says, "The way of the lazy man is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of the upright is a highway." So the way of the lazy man is limited in what he can accomplish. But the righteous man has a lot of opportunity. And then finally, you know, the result of the lazy is they're an irritant to their employer. Kind of what we talked about earlier. Difficult for them to find work. You know, nobody wants to hire them. Chapter 10, verse 26. "As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who send him." The lazy are an irritant to their bosses. Yeah, and he's probably constantly watching them because he hasn't put in very good work either, does he? He's got to watch the quality of work that he's doing, too, because he doesn't care much about it. Doesn't seem to appreciate his work. And certainly doesn't see it as a blessing, probably, right? Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 18 talks about blessing of work. Verse 18 through 20 says, "Here's what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly in the days of his life, because God helps him, keeps him busy with the joy of his heart." It seems we need to keep things in the right perspective. Be thankful for work, having work, being able to work, being blessed by God to be able to work. Any other comments on that?
18:9 says, "He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer." So I look at that particular verse and I think that, you know, there's a danger to our society if those that essentially are being paid not to work get too lazy. And, conceivably take society down. You need to be careful about that.
impacts himself and probably impacts other people too, including the families. All right, now we're going to look at the qualities of the hard worker. Well, they are self-motivated and they're disciplined. They probably have a schedule, a regimen, something they do every single day. A schedule, right? And they stay on track. So what example do we see in chapter 6, verse 6? What example of a good hard worker? The ant. We can learn from the ant, can't we? Chapter 6, verse 6. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no camp, captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. So, question from the book. What lesson is implied in the ants having no chief or overseer? What's the lesson that we see in having no chief or overseer? Need anybody standing over them, tell them what to do. It's a good lesson for us. And no complaining. Right? They don't complain. They just do what they're supposed to do. The hard worker knows the importance of doing work when it needs to be done. They see something needs to be done, and they just do it. In chapter 10, verse 4, says, he who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. And then also in chapter 28, verse 19, says, he who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty. Those who recognize the importance of working are able to provide for themselves and for their families. And hard workers aren't concerned as much with who gets credit, making sure it just needs to get done. Right? Well, the other thing about the hard worker is they receive recognition and reward for what they do. Chapter 22, verse 29 says, do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. In chapter 13, verse 4, the soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. So these passages show us that those who are hard workers are going to be rewarded for the work that they do. And in many cases, you know, good leaders like to surround themselves with good workers. And so they're going to ensure that they do get rewarded. I guess the question we ask ourselves then is, are we good workers? Are we good hard workers? And like Philip was alluding to earlier, maybe a better question is, do we see ourselves as hard workers spiritually? That's probably the best question to ask. We may want to do a self-evaluation. Are we good workers and are we good spiritual workers? Yes, sir.
Thank you.
much.
Good point.
We do need to keep in mind that our work, we work hardly as unto the Lord, because maybe my experience is different, not necessarily my personal experience, but what I've observed is that the honest and the hardworking don't always get the recognition of the Lord. Some bosses like people to sort of tell them what they want to hear. Some bosses like people who might be willing to lie for them. And the hard worker may get overlooked sometimes and all that. So if we have the mindset, well, if I work hard, everything's just going to be wonderful, it's not always that reality. So make sure we keep working for the Lord and don't get discouraged by it.
Yeah. A true reward should be God's favor, knowing that we're working for the Lord. That's exactly right. Any other comments before we, let's see, we got another lesson to get to here. Okay, we are going to look now at business. What does Proverbs and God's Word say about business? How to conduct ourselves in business. There are some things that it talks about there, and we'll use it as our text for how to conduct ourselves in business. All right. Honesty is extremely important in any kind of business. And like we talked about earlier, we're going to talk quite a bit about dishonesty, right? And the problems with dishonesty as it relates to business. And the first thing we're going to look at there is that dishonest gains are temporary. Chapter 28, verse 8 of Proverbs says that one who increases his possessions by usury and extortion gathers it for him who will pity the poor. In chapter 21, 6, it says getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fancy of those who seek death. These passages show the temporal nature of dishonest gain. It's only sure for a short period of time. Eventually, it'll catch up, right? Is what we see there. Another thing that we see about dishonesty is that dishonest gains are bitter. Chapter 20, verse 17 says, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth will be filled with gravel. See kind of the progression there of this proverb. The start feels good, it's great. The short term win there for us feels good, but at the end, the mouth is filled with gravel. There's no satisfaction there. It doesn't turn out well. And the gain from dishonesty is normally short-lived and can leave a person empty inside because of how that was gained. It's done without righteousness. Right? That's the bottom line. There's no satisfaction in ill-gotten gain. And there also seems to be an issue there with contentment as well. 1 Timothy 6:6 says, now godliness with contentment is great gain. Alluded to that earlier. We need to be content with what we've been blessed with as we live righteously. Okay. Dishonesty also brings a bad reputation. This kind of goes back to talking about wanting to maintain a good name. Well, dishonesty brings a bad reputation. Chapter 10, verse 9 says, he who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. If we do things dishonestly, it'll show itself. It'll be found out normally because of their works. And as Christians, we need to reflect Christ in our lives. Dishonesty is not a quality that we need to have as Christians. Looking at 1 Peter 2, verse 11, through verse 12 says, "Beloved, I beg you, as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." We should have the image of Christ where our conduct is honorable in everything that we do. That includes the workplace and business. And the other thing that we see in the dishonest person is that he troubles his own house. Right? There's a trickle-down effect. It can result in the loss of a job. May lose friendships. Their image is smeared. Of course, they're sinning against the Lord. And who else does it affect? We talked about how that will affect the family. That worker then cannot provide for their family. They can't get another job because what do they need for another job? They have to have references. Well, how's that provider going to be able, or that one that hired them before going to give them a good reference if they're dishonest? In chapter 15, verse 27 says, "He who is greedy for gain troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live." All right, any comments on that as far as the dishonesty and the trouble that brings? All right. We're going to talk about honesty for the buyer and the seller. Right? Again, according to your lesson books there, it talks about the buyer, the seller, and the buyer. In most transactions, businesses, there's a buyer and there's a seller. Right? We need to be honest on both sides. And for the seller, that's the one we normally think of in terms of potential dishonesty. Right? In chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight." In chapter 20, verse 23, diverse weights are an abomination to the Lord, and dishonest scales are not good. I think sometimes when we think of dishonest scales, we think of that butcher, right? It's weighing the meat for that person buying. They're putting their hand on the meat, right, to put a little extra weight on it so they can get a little bit higher price. That's dishonest scales. That's dishonesty in the workplace. Or maybe we're selling something that we know has a flaw, but we're still trying to get the higher price, and we hope that maybe they won't catch that flaw that's in that item. That's dishonesty. Something to think about there. Okay, so for the buyer, chapter 20, verse 14, good example of the buyer. Might hear the buyer say, as we see there in verse 14, "It is good for nothing," cries the buyer, "but when he's gone away, then he boasts." Trying to falsely claim the goods are no good to drive the price down, and then after they get it at the price they want, they're celebrating because they got a good buy. I was trying to think of an example of this. The best one I could think of that just came to my mind is, I don't know if you all have watched Pickers before. They go around and they try to find old stuff, and these guys try to buy stuff from people. And I remember one episode, I don't know why it came to mind, I'm not trying to promote or anything, but the guy saw something he wanted, and he asks the seller, "How much do you want for that?" Won't forget. He says something like, $50 or something like that. And I can't remember the guy's name, but he says, thought about it for a second. He said, "All right, I'll give you $200. And the seller looked at him and said, "What do you mean?" Well, and he knew it was worth a lot more than what he said he would want for it. He said, I just didn't feel right giving you $50 for something I knew is worth a lot more. And kind of knowing the guy's character on the TV show, I think that really was his character, something he would do. But anyways, I thought that was kind of demonstrated that. You know, we need to be honest at all times, whether the buyer or we're the seller, right? In all business, we need to make sure we are being honest. Maybe somebody gives you more change than you're owed. You give them a 10, they think you give them a 20, and they give you more change back. What do we do? Are we going to say, all right, I got 10 extra bucks. Good to go. Let's go get something else now. You know, from what we see, you know, in God's Word, in Proverbs, we see the thing we ought to do is we need to let them know. You overpaid. Just doing what's right and what we see God's Word telling us. Any comments on that before we move on to that? I think we've got one last slide here.
We're called to be a peculiar people. And by doing any of those things that you described compared to this world, we will surely be a peculiar people.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, a little bit on gifts and bribes. Didn't want to go into too much detail on gifts and bribes here, but we just need to understand that we shouldn't do anything to try to take advantage of other people, right? That's the main thing here, our image, being honest, not being dishonest, right? So bribes and gifts used to gain an advantage over another person should not be. Chapter 15, verse 27. He who is greedy for gain troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. And chapter 17, verse 23 says it very well and gets at the heart of the issue, I think. When it says, a wicked man accepts a bribe behind the back and pervert the ways of justice. So in taking a bribe, we're preventing justice from occurring. And God also gives us some tips for success in the business world. A couple things mentioned in your lessons there. Just go over them very briefly here. Integrity, like we've always talked about, is one of the big things there, you know, for success in the business world. Very important. Chapter 11, verse 3, the integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. And then also competency is an important attribute. In chapter 22, verse 29, says, do you see a man who excels in his work? We already read that earlier. He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. A competent, diligent worker will be rewarded. Looking at Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all. Thanks to God the Father through Him. If it's worth doing, it should be worth doing unto the Lord with all our hearts. All right, thank you all for your time.